Welcome to this week's Personal Finance Podcast. I'm Lenora Walters, and joining me today are Kate Phelan, Emma Adjemang, Deputy Personal Finance Editor and Personal Finance Writer at Investors Chronicle, and James Carfew, Head of Research at Quoted Data. Investment trusts have more complicated structures than open-ended funds, so you need to be well informed about how they work and do even more due diligence before investing in one than with an open-ended fund. So this week, Investors Chronicle is running an investment trust special issue to help you pick the right investment trusts and use them in the right way. So hopefully you too can reap the considerable rewards these types of funds can offer. James, an important figure relating to investment trusts is their discount or premium to net asset value, or NAV for short. Can you explain what this is and why investors should take it into consideration when deciding whether or not to put their money into an investment trust?
Sure, thank you. Basically, the net asset value is just the value of all of the stocks and shares, whatever it is invested in the investment company. And then the share price depends on the demand or supply of the shares, so how popular they are. And the difference between the two, between the share price and the net asset value, is the discount or the premium. So sometimes somebody will be trading on a discount, and you can basically buy all of the assets at a cheaper price than you would be able to if you went and bought them separately.
Okay, I mean, that sounds rather good, doesn't it? Like a bit of a bargain. But is a discount, let's say, is what looks like a bargain always a good reason to buy an investment trust?
You have to be careful. I mean, the difference is that there are lots of different types of investment companies, and some of them it's quite hard to value their assets. So it means that the discount, the NAV might be quite old, and therefore you're not actually using up-to-date information. So that's one thing you have to look out for. But really, all it is about popularity. So if there's a big discount there, there'll need to be a reason for that. There'll be a reason why people are shying away from the fund, and it might be because it's quite complicated and people don't really understand it, or it might be because the manager's not performing very well. Sometimes there's a structural problem with the trust, so it just might be something that the people just don't like the corporate governance of it, that they don't like the directors, that sort of thing. So you always have to do a bit of digging, a bit of investigation before you decide you're actually comfortable in doing that. So it looks like a bargain, but definitely sort of use a bit of a sniff test with it.
Okay, because sometimes things are cheap for good reason.
Exactly.
Now, on the flip side, you get investment trusts trading at a premium to their net assets, aka you're paying more than the assets are worth. Now, that seems like a bit of a rip-off on the surface of things. So should you always avoid an investment trust if it's trading at a premium?
Again, it's sort of horses for courses thing. There are some funds where they have investments that aren't valued on a regular basis, which I've said already. That includes things like stakes in the management company. So a very good example of a fund that's trading on a big premium would be the Lindsay Train Investment Trust. And the reason is for that is presumably the investors are putting a much bigger value on the underlying asset management company than the manager is itself. And you swings all roundabouts who's right. And there's similar sort of thing you get with infrastructure funds, where the managers calculate an NAV based on the cash flows of the company. But investors seem to be prepared to pay a bit more than the assets are actually valued at. And that sort of driving down is sort of the appetite for risk. So basically the managers being a little bit more cautious than the investors are. And it's all a debatable point. So I'd say sometimes it's a good idea, but generally I'd be very cautious about buying something at a big premium because they do have a tendency. Things go in and out of fashion, and all of a sudden you find something that's just trading back down to asset value again, you've lost money.
Okay. Now, what sort of levels have investment trust discounts or premiums been at recently?
They've been on a narrowing trend generally. We do a sort of big overview of how the sector goes on a quarterly basis. If we looked at 2016, discounts did widen out a little bit on average, but they hit a sort of low around just after Brexit, after the referendum. And then they were probably on average about 12.5%. And then they've been narrowing steadily since then, and narrowing all through with this year. By the end of September, which is the last time we actually measured it, they were about 6%. So they've come in quite a long way.
Okay, and do you think discounts will tighter further from here, or can we expect them to widen out again?
We are approaching levels that are around the sort of tightest that they've ever been. I think we've got down to low single digits before. We've never had a situation where the average fund's been trading at a premium. It just doesn't tend to happen that way. But we are in a bit of a funny market generally, so it's definitely hard to say. So I wouldn't want to call it either way.
Yeah. I mean, what's driving this sort of historic tightening?
Funds have got much better about sorting their discounts out, and it's something that a lot of people have been pushing them to do. So one way they can do that is to buy back shares that nobody wants to buy themselves. So that just reduces the supply of shares, and that tightens the discount down. And they've got much better at doing that. And some of them have absolute policies to maintain a discount around a kind of zero level. That's not something that all trusts can do by any means, and it's not something you should be pushing for and for most funds, because it's very hard to them to turn their underlying investments into cash, then it's not something they can do quite easily. And it's one of the strengths of investment companies that they don't have to react to big cash flows in inflows and outflows. That's one of the reasons they perform better than open-ended funds. So you don't want to push for that. But generally, it's been a trend that the managers have got much better at addressing the discounts. And I don't think that's something that's going to go away. So we are going to stay much tighter than we were maybe on average 5 years ago.
Okay. Now, investment trusts with good dividend streams and attractive yields often have a tighter discount or trade at a premium. And some investment trusts have been making efforts to improve their payouts to try and tighten their discounts or maybe get to a premium too. How have they been doing this?
One of the things that has become much easier for them recently is to pay dividends out of capital. So what that means is, instead of taking in dividends from their underlying investments and then paying that as an income, they are selling some of their investments to help fund the dividend to you. And that seems to work. If it's done sort of quite modestly, people seem to get that's not a bad idea, and it's helped bring discounts down and help move things onto premiums. So we've seen that in sectors like private equity, where one of the funds that we followed, Standard Life Private Equity, introduced a dividend, and their discounts come rattling down from something close to 30% down to sort of about 5% today. And that's only one element of the reason that that's happened, but it definitely has been something that's encouraged that. I think there's a bit sort of caution by some investors about this still, because you do have to think what will happen when markets are falling, and you're effectively selling the underlying investments to pay the dividend in a falling market, and that sort of runs the risk of destroying a bit of the value of your capital.
Okay, I mean, that's not good. I mean, even if you're getting a fat dividend, you don't want to have capital losses. So should you avoid investment trusts which pay income from capital?
I think you should be careful just to watch how sustainable you think that dividend stream is. And so if you've got something that's actually quite volatile, I'd be a bit more wary of it. But you're thinking about a sector, something like private equity. Basically, the investments are quite sort of stable. They then have quite a big spread of investments, and they're reinvested in real companies and doing sensible things. And so that's the sort of thing that should be sustainable over the longer term.
Okay, now we've been talking about some of these unique attributes of investment trusts. What are some of the other key things which differentiate investment trusts from open-ended funds?
Well, if you stick with it on the income theme for the moment, one of the great things that investment companies can do is that they can salt away some of their income into reserves in the good times, and then use that to help pay dividends in the bad times. And that's quite a powerful thing. So actually, if you look at long-term records of dividends from investment companies versus open-ended funds like OEICs and Unit Trust, they've got a much better record of increasing their dividends every year. And there are a whole swathe of funds that manage to do it for 30, 40 years. So that's really quite a cool thing. There are other sorts of wrinkles that they can use to help enhance the performance. And one of the big, most powerful things probably is being able to borrow money. That creates a bit more risk, So it has to be done judiciously. But they don't tend to go mad. I mean, a normal kind of gearing level might be about 10%. So gearing is the borrowings that they take out. So £1 in every 10 they might borrow from the bank. They may be paying sort of like sometimes as low as 3-4% on it. And they're investing in things that may be paying them a dividend of 4 or 5, plus the world capital growth they're going to get. So that helps performance. That's a good thing. There's one of the things that is often overlooked, but actually is really helpful, is that there's a board of directors, and their job is to make sure the fund does really well. And that doesn't exist on an open-ended fund. So they're there acting for the shareholders, making sure that things are run properly, that the manager's doing their job properly, that the expenses aren't too high. All those sorts of things help investment companies outperform.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the ability to take on debt and how it can help. I think, as we all know, borrowing is a risk. We've seen it on a personal and, you know, a larger level. So for an investment trust, when can having debt be a disadvantage?
If you got caught out, the market suddenly fell. If you're geared into the downside, yeah, then it just magnifies your losses, and that's a real risk. If we go back and think about maybe 2007-08, when everything got a bit mad and things got a bit overvalued, there were some funds that had borrowed money then. And when everything fell, the losses were magnified, and the banks that lend them money had put covenants on that, and they basically said, if you can't cover your interest, or if your borrowings are too big relative to the assets we've got to cover them, then we want the money back now. And that created real problems for some funds.
Which will be some examples?
Probably the best examples are some of the ones that invested in European property, and they had very high levels of gearing then. Sometimes maybe as much as sort of 3 or 4 to 1, and they got badly caught out.
Okay, thank you, James. Some really helpful explanations. Now, although discounts are relatively tighter, there's one investment trust sector that looks like it offers particular value. Kate, you've been looking at this. Which is it?
Well, I've been looking at the Asia-Pac ex-Japan sector. And Asian equities are looking really good value. The trusts are trading on quite wide discounts to NAV. And that's despite the fact they've performed really well in recent years. And they also look quite good value because the equities underlying these trusts, Asian equities, are looking cheaper than their long-term average, and also much cheaper than global stocks, which we're hearing are pretty expensive at the moment. And also Asian stocks do have kind of further to grow, many people would argue. So there's kind of a, you know, you can see growth going forward there at good value.
Okay, now you also said in the article that investment trusts are a particularly good way to access Asian equities. Why?
Well, investment trusts are a good vehicle to access slightly less liquid stocks or smaller caps. And that's because the managers obviously don't need to sell the stocks that they hold in order to meet redemptions, as with an open-ended fund. And Asian equities do tend to be slightly less liquid and slightly more volatile than other kinds of equity.
Okay, so they're volatile and less liquid, so is there some risks? Are there any other risks then that you need to consider with these assets?
Well, China is a big risk when it comes to Asian equities. China is a huge chunk of both the MSCI Asia ex Japan index and the MSCI Asia Pac ex Japan index. So if, you know, we do get any kind of issue in China and we get market falls there, that contagion would spread around Asian equities, and it's likely that these funds would suffer. There is also a risk in that this whole region has done very well, particularly in the past year, and that has been driven by the major Asia kind of tech stocks in particular. And so it's really been those big names driving the index, and now they count for a very big chunk of it. So in fact, what you've seen is quite a lot of concentration in Asia, in the biggest kind of most important countries there, and some of these big stocks. So, you know, in a way that is kind of skewing the average, and you need to be aware that if any of those fall, again, you could see impacting funds.
Okay, some things to think about. What are the other main things that investors need to be aware of?
The other thing to be aware of is that these trusts are slightly more expensive than other investment trust sectors, and they do have quite high performance fees in some cases, certainly more expensive in general than the open-ended funds that invest in Asia. So it is something to be aware of, but partly justified, I guess, by the fact that these stocks are less liquid and harder to research in many ways.
Okay, now there's 15 Asia ex-Japan investment trusts, but these tend to follow one of two investment approaches. What are these?
So the two main strategies the divide between the two strategies are the managers who deliberately allocate towards these very high growth companies, which tend to be more expensive and tend to be these kind of tech driven disruptive businesses. So things like driverless cars, cloud computing, that kind of thing. And there are also, on the other side, managers who buy cheap, kind of unloved value stocks that the market might be underrating, or those more kind of defensive companies with very strong balance sheets and good cash flows. So I guess you could split it into kind of tech bull managers and more cautious value managers.
Okay, so what would be examples of trusts following these strategies?
So a good example of a growth-focused trust would be Pacific Horizon, and that's a Baillie Gifford fund. Baillie Gifford being one of these houses which is very keen to invest in these kind of exciting, disruptive businesses. So that trust tends to invest in stocks with slightly higher PEs, and it would be kind of tech-focused things and things in the areas of internet commerce and cloud computing, some of those really big Asian e-commerce names, for example. And Fidelity Asian Values would be a good example of a more value-focused trust. You see much less of that trust invested in China, for example, much higher weighting to India. And the manager there is really looking for stocks with a demonstrable kind of barrier to entry and very good cash flow, balance sheets, all of that kind of thing. So slightly more defensive in that sense.
Okay, James, what do you think about Asian equities and the investment trusts which put their money into them?
I think it's really quite an exciting part of the market, definitely, and it definitely is today. We've been through a long period where China in particular, and as Kate said, China is a big chunk of the index. China has been a bit slower than people wanted it to be, and a bit disappointing, and that's dragged down returns across the whole of Asia, because also a lot of those countries export and import to China as well, so it's a big part of their trade. And that's probably one of the reasons why it ended up with these equities being a bit cheaper than they are on the global average. So that actually presents an opportunity for an investor, because you're actually getting into something that's attractively valued. And there are some very good managers here, definitely. And the two funds that has been mentioned already, we really like Ewan Marks and Brown, the manager of Pacific Horizon. He takes a bit of a different view to most of the peer group. And some of the stocks he's invested in really sound quite exciting. And I think it's one of the things that we overlook here in the UK is that we think of things like Amazon and Facebook and Google. But there are companies, equivalent companies in China, some of them are almost more successful. The sort of Tencent and Baidu's and JD.com and that sort of thing, Alibaba. So I do think that this is an exciting part of the market. And one of the things that the managers always push is their whole demographic change and economic change that's taking place there. So where we have sort of an aging population and we're sort of stagnating a bit, they've still got quite a dynamic growing population and a really fast expanding middle class, that all of whom want a washing machine and a car and, all the sorts of things that we have. And that's driving huge consumer boom in those countries. And that will just carry on going and creates massive opportunities for companies in that region.
Okay, now you mentioned you like Pacific Horizon. So are you of the opinion that investment trusts with a bullish view on tech stocks are better than the Asian trust taking more of a value-oriented approach?
Better is a very pejorative word. Actually, I really like both managers, because Nitin Bajaj, who runs the Fidelity Asian Values Fund, he's a quite cautious investor, and he does want to buy things at the right price. And for him, the sort of valuations that people are putting on these big tech companies are a bit overexciting. He doesn't want to chase those, and so he's been a bit more cautious. But still, One of the things that, that I think is very important for investment companies and there is their ability to take a long-term view. And with both managers, they can look at a stock and they can look through the noise and try and find something that's able to grow over the course of the next 3, 5, 10 years without having to worry about buying or selling it that they might do if they weren't running an open-ended fund. And both of those managers take advantage of that.
Okay, now there's obviously lots of potential, but Kate did say that Asian equities are volatile, risky, and the investment trusts that focus on them have relatively higher charges than open-ended funds. So are they worth it?
Oh, yeah, I think they're worth it. I think so. We've alluded a bit to the gearing. Neither of those managers actually use a lot of gearing, so but it is a factor in helping you outperform. And generally, but I do think it's this closing structure, the taking the long-term view thing, that does tend to work over the long term. So if you look at the long-term returns of the investment companies against the long-term returns of the open-ended ones, they are better.
And I guess that's particularly important in Asia. Thank you, James. Some really good suggestions. And you can read Kate's full report on Asian investment trusts in this week's magazine and the website. As part of our investment trust special issue, we've asked 4 fund of investment trust managers which trusts they think look interesting at the moment in different areas. Now, one of these areas was growth. So, Emma, what were some of the trusts they suggested?
Well, one example is Henderson Opportunities Trust, which is run by James Henderson. And this fund aims to provide shareholders with higher than average capital growth over the medium to long term, predominantly from a portfolio of UK companies. Another example our professional pick suggested was Henderson Smaller Companies Investment Trust, which is run by Neil Herman. And this fund aims to maximise shareholder total returns by investing mainly in smaller companies in the UK.
Now, why did they single out these particular trusts?
Well, we were talking earlier about the benefit of investing in investment trusts when they're trading at a discount. And that's the case for both these trusts. They're quite cheap at the moment as they're both trading on high discounts to net asset value of around 13%. And this is despite having really good long-term performance. So, for example, Henderson Opportunities share price delivered 127% over 5 years. And that's in comparison to the FTSE All Share, which made 63% over the same period. Meanwhile, Henderson Smaller Companies made 150% in over 5 years compared to 120% by the FTSE Small Cap Index. So really good performance from both funds.
Okay, now one thing these trusts have in common, other than being run by the same management company, is that they're both focused on UK smaller companies and are trading at what look like wide discounts to NAV. James, are other UK smaller companies investment trusts also trading at discounts to NAV?
Yes, I think the average for the sector today is about 12.5, 13. And it ranges from probably the widest sort of normal fund would be the Montanaro fund, which I think is on about 19 discount, up to quite a recent new issue, which is the Downing Microcap fund. And I think that's trading on a premium. Mm-hmm. It's relatively rare to see these funds trade on premiums, though. And it sort of reflects what investors think. And we're going back to the calculation of asset values and things again. If you had to turn the fund into cash in a hurry, because they're invested in small companies, it's much harder to sell the portfolio. And that might mean that you get actually less than the NAV for it. And I think that there's that sort of risk is what people build in, and that's why they trade at slightly bigger discounts than average.
Okay, so on the subject of whether they are a bargain or not, another issue is that they could be adversely impacted because investing companies that typically have more of a domestic focus, which could suffer if there's an economic slowdown due to Brexit. So is that a concern when considering whether to invest in a smaller company's investment trust?
If you talk to the managers, it's completely polarised. So you will talk to some managers who basically say that Brexit isn't a problem, it's all going to be wonderful, and anyway, the companies that they've bought are going to be able to march through this and make a lot of money. And I think that's definitely true in some cases, and that's the beauty of stock picking. You don't buy a whole index. You buy the companies that you think are actually going to perform. So yeah, that's true. But then you talk to the other people, and they're really quite depressed. So take your choice, isn't it? Mm.
Okay, so anybody's guess, a bit like the government's approach to Brexit. Now, what examples of investment trusts that you like in sectors that you think offer value?
There's all sorts of things around now. I tend not to. We try Equated Data not to make recommendations. We're not really supposed to do that. That's all going to change next year, anyway. That's all by the by. But we are looking at all sorts of different areas. One of the things that I've been looking at recently is infrastructure, because since the Labour Party conference, where they made noises about PFI, and a lot of the infrastructure funds have come off. And they're still not trading at discounts, but they are trading at much lower premiums than they were, particularly funds like HICL and the John Lang Fund. They're sort of down to around 2 or 3 premiums. And then maybe, if nothing happens, then there may be, that might be sort of attractive, all sorts of different bits and pieces sort of run around the world. We like India. That seems to be an economy that showed a lot of promise and has been disappointing recently. But it's been disappointing because the government's been doing things to sort of re-engineer the economy that have disrupted things a bit. So, for instance, they swapped all the notes in circulation to try and reduce corruption, and then they introduced kind of VAT. All these things have had an effect on the GDP growth and made people a bit wary of the country. But actually, we think the growth is actually going to be quite exciting there. And there are ways that you can play that. There are big cap funds like the Aberdeen New India Fund, but there are also some more dynamic small cap fund, which is the India Capital Growth. So that's actually one of those we cover. We quite like that one. If you talk to a lot of the managers and the boards and things, it seems as though Europe is actually doing an awful lot better than it was. We've had phenomenal performance from funds like TR European Growth over the past year, but actually the managers there still think that I can carry on going. And Japan is the other one. It's been really interesting that we've just had the re-election of the government there. Shinzo Abe got back in again on an increased majority, and that seems to have gone down very well, and the market's moved ahead on the back of this. But the Japan's been one of these areas that's been quite difficult to achieve real economic growth for a long time. But you've still been able to find companies, and this goes back to the stock picking thing, that are capable of growing, are capable of selling things abroad and doing all that sort of stuff. So managers like the Bedingfield Chinnippon Fund, actually one of the best performing funds it's been Atlantis Japan. So there are lots of interesting opportunities around there.
Okay, thank you, James. Some more really good suggestions, and see this week's magazine and the website for a full list of professional investment trust picks. That's all we've got time for today, so it just remains to thank Kate Bailey and Emma Adjumang at Investors Chronicle and James Carfew, Head of Research at Quoted Data. But also see this week's Investment Trust Special Issue of Investors Chronicle, which has more on these topics and others, including a roundup of the key trends and events in the sector and the trusts professional investors think have potential. Thank you for listening and have a good weekend.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.